Well, we are supposed to be having music here. Just as a little lead in here. This is a friend of mine, Nazia Howard, playing her harp and music. Welcome to BBS Radio. For the next hour, you'll be listening to Sound Health. We certainly appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day to join us. So I'm your host, Sherry Edwards. And on this show, we attempt to bring you information and ideas to support your mind and your body and your spirit within that, the thoughts of self-health. We believe in the ideal of the body green. Don't you love that? The body green. The movement we started because we believe in supporting health and wellness through the body's own natural resources. And we realize that the body occasionally needs support from outside sources, but ultimately our body has the innate intelligence to heal itself. And in that, we seek out the most natural, most efficacious healing modalities that we can find, and we share them with our audience. Today is no exception to that mission. Our special guest is Jessica Nappi-Saletti, author of Building Better Speech Manual. Also, I can't read my own writing. I just should do this off the top of my head. The book's about helping the people you love move through developmental milestones in speech and language. Now, I try to get prepared for the show and write everything down, so I'll be absolutely prepared, and then can't read what I've written. We're going to be with our guests in just a few minutes, but as usual, we have a couple of announcements. As most of you know, we're sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology. We're a registered 501c3. That means we're a nonprofit organization. Our primary focus here at the center in Ohio is to use low-frequency sound and its effects on cell communication. We test the frequencies of the brain using voice spectral analysis. And I said that and many, many years ago and really didn't have the basis to back it up. I just knew it was true, but nobody else did. And I recently read a report from Pfizer Pharmaceuticals that said, this guy named Brad O'Connor said, the voice is a great way to look at what's happening in the brain. I've written him for a reference to that just to see where they got the idea. I'll probably reference it back to us, but I just am really interested in how they come about that. But here in the center, people volunteer. We come in. We take a vocal sample, put that in our computer, and out comes a status report of what's going on with someone's body. We're not all of it, not everything. We're not the be-all, end-all. Because we just really don't have all the answers. We're here, we're learning every day and bringing in new information. Our body, cell by cell, builds a body, builds our what we live in. And we attempt to bring into that the idea or information about how each cell communicates with itself. From the genes and proteins, neurotransmitters, biochemicals, nutrients, hormones, enzymes, all of that contributes to us as our physical body. It contributes to our health, and it influences the way we communicate with ourselves and our outside world. To give you a bit of background about this, in the early 2000s, we applied for a grant from the National Institute of Health about using vocal profiling to look at different disease processes, the throat, the muscles. And now Pfizer is using those ideas to predict Parkinson's disease. We're also presently working here with the Army doing a project to create a vocal analysis that will show the degree of damage for soldiers who've been shot up, who've been close to these bomb blasts and the accompanying post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, I just recently heard a really horrible statistic that there's more soldiers coming back committing suicide than there were soldiers that were killed. I just find that despicable. And we're just committed to making their lives a little easier by helping them return to a more normal state when they get back. And we have put together a whole community educational package for that if any of you want to get involved with that. Our present projects deal with strokes and blood clotting and weight management. I'm happy to announce I've lost 62 pounds on the program, and we're using the voice to determine neurotransmitters and enzymes that are involved in weight management. So if any of you are interested in any of our projects, you can visit one of our websites. One of them is Nutra, N-U-T-R-A, Sounds, NutraSounds.com. Or if you're research-oriented, our Journal of Bioacoustic Biology, which can be found at jbab.org, just as bad apple boy. There's lots of information and videos, all of it free. One particular free video there is called Good Vibrations, and it pertains to today's show. On our side, it's a free video about a young girl that's just entering high school, and she had a diagnosis of failure to thrive. Her vocal analysis that we did indicated that her growth hormones had just not kicked in. We were able to identify all the associated biochemicals. We gave it to her by frequency, and during that summer between junior high and high school, she just morphed into a normal teenager. And she's now finished college, and we're very happy that we could be a part of making her life better. I guess I could just say we're very proud of being a part of moving medicine forward. So if any of you are interested in any of our free classes or free videos, you can call us during normal business hours at 740-698-9119. Or write to me, Sherry, S-H-A-R-R-Y. My real name is Sharon. You can remember it that way. Sherry on air, all one word, S-H-A-R-R-Y, @gmail.com. Or if it's easier, just class at vocalprofiling.com. It's all over our site at BBS Radio. So just BBS Radio, like where you're listening to this, is bbsradio.com. So you can get in touch with us lots and lots of ways. Okay, enough from our sponsor that benefits you. Let's welcome Jessica Nappi Saletti to the show. Jessica, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be on it.
When I first got the announcement of what you were doing and about your book, I was incredibly excited, and I called up our media department. Well, actually, I sent them an email, and I couldn't even wait for them to respond. I called them up right after I sent them the email, and I said, I want to see if you can get in touch with this lady who's written this book, Building Better Speech Manual, and see if she would like to share her information with people on the show. And I'm very happy and honored that you could be with us and taking the time out of your day. This is exactly the kind of thing that our listeners want to hear about. And I put out an announcement that we were going to have you on the show just about an hour ago, and I've already gotten 7 questions that the audience wants to ask you.
So, okay, great.
Tell us about the book. I haven't seen it. I am just excited about it. So tell us about it.
Well, the book is basically for parents. It could be also used for teachers or students, anyone that has contact with a child. It can assist the parent in identifying if a speech disorder does in fact exist. Again, if the child has difficulty producing a few sounds, this may be developmentally appropriate. However, the problem may be more severe and require intervention. The manual can point the parent in the right direction as far as which professionals to contact and when. In addition, the book shows individuals how to monitor a child's speech to ensure developmental delay isn't manifesting itself. And also, it provides activities that can be done at home with items that the family should already have. So it's not nothing that you have to go out and spend a lot of money on to gather supplies. And there's also tips on how to assist young children with speech acquisition to maintain and monitor communication skills and word lists, developmental charts. Basically, any question that a parent may have about speech can be found in this manual.
Sounds like it has practical exercises in it, too.
Yes, it does. It has a lot of activities.
Is this limited to just children?
You know, I would definitely say it is. You could probably use these activities for possibly a stroke victim. However, they're geared towards children. They could probably be modified, but I would really say it's more geared towards children.
Is there more speech problems now than there used to be?
I'm not quite sure, but I do feel like I can give you some of the research that has been done, and because there's a great deal of research on communication skills in children and the long-term effects that result with having a speech and language difficulty. And I think we are becoming more aware of speech problems in children at an earlier age due to all the other disorders that are being found in children, such as autism. And I think it's bringing speech to the forefront right now. And I see that there is also 90% of children that have at least one undiagnosed ear infection in the first year of life. And this can result in hearing loss. So I think that we need to be a little more proactive now than we were in the past and get children help as soon as possible, because the research has shown that children that do have a good speech model at home and do enter speech therapy at an early age are much more successful.
What should parents watch for that's going to indicate a problem?
Well, there's a lot of things that a parent can look for, but I'll just give you a couple things that are really on the forefront of what you should be looking for. If a child is completely uninterested in communicating with others, that's a severe warning sign, because we are born with a need to communicate. We smile, we cry, we use body language very early on. So a lack of interest in expressing ideas is definitely something a parent should look out for. Another thing that a parent could be concerned with is if a child can't carry out a simple direction or seems not to understand what people are saying to them. This could be a processing problem, a hearing issue, but it should not be ignored. And lastly, the child has numerous errors in articulation and is difficult to understand. Intervention should definitely be sought. Many times parents seem to understand their children when others can't. And when a parent sees that other people do not understand their child, that should be a big warning sign that the child may need some intervention at this point.
So this book is more about more than just forming words. It's also about comprehension, listening skills, receptive speech as well.
Exactly. I was going to say that because there's two different types of language. There's expressive and receptive, and what they understand is a big part of language as well, not just what they communicate.
So you're not just looking for a child that has a problem with the muscles in the throat or the tongue, although that's part of control. You're looking for the whole package in this book.
Absolutely, absolutely. Language is focused and articulation is focused. And within language, it's also the receptive language, not just the expressive language.
I had a grandson. Still have him, but he was very, very young. And he was beginning to speak. And he would say a sentence that I thought was absolute gibberish. And I couldn't understand him. And I asked him to repeat it. And he would. And he understood well. And he repeated it exactly the same. But his sister, who was a couple years older, would come along and say, "He said blah-da-da." Can you explain that, how the sister could know exactly, he could repeat exactly, and I didn't have the foggiest idea
That's extremely typical. I have three children of my own, and my little one does the same thing. She seems to just be jabbering along, and my two boys can tell me what she says. I just think that they pick up on little cues, and they also pick up on things that parents just aren't attuned to. We're doing so many other things as we're going through our day that we're not listening to all those little things that are being said exactly the same way, whereas the other children, since they're interacting with each other all the time, do pick up on it. And siblings do that. They do speak for the younger sibling or for a disabled sibling and are able to pick up on things that us as parents cannot. And it's just something that we have to deal with in the universe. There's really no explanation as to why that is, but it's very common in households with more than one child.
So it's just us parents who aren't paying attention.
Well, you could say that. I do know that I've worked with twins that had their own language before, and they understood each other, and the mother understood them, and it was completely another language. It wasn't English. Like, had nothing. It had none of the rules of English. It had none of the rules that we follow when we speak. But yet, they both, if you showed them a picture of a cat, they both called it the same exact thing, and the parent would know that that meant cat.
Well, it's odd.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. I interrupted you. I wanted to ask you a pertinent question I didn't know anything about. You said you've worked with children. Did you write this book out of a professional need, a professional reason?
Absolutely. It is a guide for parents, obviously. And I wrote it in response to numerous inquiries from parents on the topic of speech and language development as a speech and language specialist while I was working in schools, but I was also the director of child study teams, and I oversaw a lot of the speech services, and parents would come to me all the time with questions, and I feel that this book really addresses every question that I have been asked over the years. I do have a degree in speech pathology as well as two advanced degrees in education administration, so I try to share as much of that knowledge as I possibly can in this manual.
Well, you are also associated with some organizations and groups that try to help these children also. Can you talk about that a minute?
Sure. When a person purchases the Building Better Speech Manual, a portion of the profits are donated, and they are donated to themagicfoundation.org, which is a family-oriented website. Again, I am a parent, and I know that it's difficult to watch your child struggle with any type of disorder or delay in development. And this particular organization is an online, nonprofit, for parents, by parents website. They assist families with children who suffer from various growth hormone deficiencies and provide research as well. A similar story so parents do not feel alone. And this goes back to your introduction with the growth hormone deficiencies. My goal is to be able to make a significant donation to this organization through the sales of the book, because they really do provide a very valuable and educational forum for parents to discuss childhood growth disorders, as well as give parents some comfort in knowing that they're not alone.
That is wonderful. We certainly are going to put it on our website if you would allow that.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Can you tell people what MAGIC, the magic of that, stands for? I found that interesting on the site. Hello? I think we may have lost our connection here.
Oh, we're back. Hello?
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 We thought we lost.
Sorry, I think I lost you for a minute.
I was asking you if you would tell the people what the magic stands for on the site. Did I lose you again? Well, I will tell them. It says on the site, MAGIC, M-A-G-I-C, stands for Major Aspects of Growth in Children. And the site, magic.org, is about growth hormones, the first proteins that come into the system and allowing the child to grow correctly and to have its DNA and RNA. Divide correctly.
Hello? Hello?
Are you there? I went ahead and told them what the magic .org was about.
Magic. Major aspects of growth in children. I'm sorry, I didn't. I'm losing you. I don't know why. Yes, it's a great organization. I don't know if you're on their website or not, but it is major aspects of growth in children.
Don, the producer of the show, told me that they've been having problems with the site all day long. So if we're fading in and out, it's probably some leftover little pieces of that they're having issues with. So we apologize for fading in and out, but there's not much we can do about it.
That's okay.
I just had a question from an audience member that I think is really interesting. What do you think about talking baby talk to your baby?
Absolutely not. And I'm going to, I have that as something that I would be addressing. There are things that a parent can do to assist a child in their speech development, and one of the things is not to use baby talk. We don't talk like that to each other, so it's really important to not talk to a baby like that. There's no reason for it. You should really always give them a proper speech model.
Why do you think people sort of goo and talk higher to a baby in their speech? Like, oh, isn't it cute?
I think it's just we're conditioned to do that, and we see other people doing that with children. We think that's the way we're supposed to talk to a baby. It's not terrible to do, and it's not going to hurt them in any way. But the reality is that we don't talk like that, and they're never going to talk like that unless they're an adult and they're going to talk to a baby in baby talk. So there's really no need to talk to anybody in baby talk. We should be talking to them as if they're little people, which is what they are. I really think that when people do that, they're just doing what they would normally see other people doing.
Do you have a reference list for parents in your book?
I do. In the back of the book, there is a reference list, and there are a couple other organizations, and there's other websites in which they can go to get some more information. There are several. And a good one is the American Speech and Language Hearing Association, which is ASHA. And that's a great website because that lists professionals that have all the credentials through them. And you really want to look for a speech-language pathologist that do have their credentials through ASHA.
One of the things I'm asked here, another question that came up is, could you talk about some typical age-related speech issues? For instance, when does the ability to say an R come into the language?
Okay, ability to say R, S, W, those are all very late developing sounds. Those sounds shouldn't be fully developed until 8. Of course, a lot of children have them earlier than that, but if they don't, that's okay. So they are later developing sounds. There aren't any real age, I'm trying to think of how she worded that, age disorders for a certain age, but I can give you some ideas of what sounds should be developed at certain ages. But the first few sounds should be B's, M's, P's, and that's how you hear ba ba ba, ma ma ma, pa pa pa. Those are all the beginning sounds, the very, very beginning sounds. And then the last sounds to develop are TH, the J's, the S, R, W.
I noticed with our kids that they had trouble with words like rural and regularly.
Right, because you have a lot of, you have a lot of the same sound together, like regularly. That's tough because quite a few syllables, but as well as you have the R in there twice, and that's a little bit more difficult to move the tongue from the front to from the back to the front and back to the back again. So it really depends on, of course, the length of the word as well, but you wouldn't expect a child of 3 or 4 to say the word regularly. So once they're using that word, they should be able to say it, which is around 6, 7, 8.
Here's kind of a funny one. this is from Claudine. My baby said da 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 first. I have heard repeatedly that mum 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 is the first syllable. I'm jealous. Is there something that I could have done to get mom to come out first?
Absolutely not. Well, actually, M's and D's form at almost the same time. By 18 months, they should have both sounds, the M and the D. So I'm sure mama is coming very soon.
That's cute. Here's a great question from Chris, one of our regular listeners. Have you seen an increase in speech and language delay and development issues over the last 5 or 10 years? And if so, do you have any idea about the causes?
I don't know if there's really been an increase. Of course, there's been different diagnoses that that are coming out that weren't out maybe 20 years ago. I know that when I was a child, there wasn't anybody with autism in my classroom with me. And now it's a very prominent disorder that we see all over. So I guess there is a rise, but I don't know if it's related to exactly speech. I think there's always another element that is affecting the speech development.
Do you think it has anything to do with vaccinations? Because I have seen speech go during the time they're getting vaccination. I've even seen the kids go backwards in their speech development. And we get a lot of them in here. We've probably done 200 or 300 of these kids over the past couple of years.
Well, I think you're talking about some really, really tough cases, the ones that you're probably seeing, the children that you're seeing, because speech does stop at times, and it does actually seem like it's degressing a little bit, only because a lot of times when a child's learning a different skill, sometimes they stop speaking. So if the little child that was saying da, 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 da starts to walk, they may decide not to talk at all because all their focus is going into walking. And then speech will emerge again. So sometimes there are breaks in communication with children. It's not often. It's not all the time. But it does happen. As far as vaccines, I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't have any medical knowledge as to whether or not that would affect speech. I do know that there was a link between that and autism and some other childhood disorders. So I don't know. And all of those disorders do have a speech element connected with them. So I guess it could go either way, but I don't really know if there is a connection.
So that's not something you address in building better speech?
I don't address how a speech problem occurs. I'm addressing, okay, it happens, now let's move forward. And where do I go from now, from here? Like, where would I go in the future with this problem or with my child, or how am I going to get them the help that they need?
Okay, we just had a couple of questions. I'll talk about the questions because I don't want to ignore people who have taken their time to write to us. But twice this question's been asked. Do speech issues run in families, and is there sometimes an emotional trauma link? So you said you don't address that. But
well, yes, they do run in families. We do find that there is a genetic link between parents that have that had a childhood speech disorder and a child has a similar speech disorder. It's usually like a stuttering. We do find there to be a genetic link between stuttering and even just regular communication issues, such as the language we were talking about, either the receptive or the receptive. We do see that there is a link, a genetic. But again, typically, both the parent and the child do outgrow it with therapy. As far as what was the other question? I'm sorry.
Could it be emotional trauma?
Of course. Emotional trauma sometimes can shut down a child completely, and I'm sure you know this through your practice, where they don't have any communication and no willingness to communicate with others. So it could be a complete shutdown.
I have kind of an oddball question here, and this is from me. When you're talking about stuttering, if the parent stutters, and the child stutters, couldn't that just be emulation?
It could. However, your normal speech pattern is not to stutter. So there's probably so many people that this child is exposed to with proper speech patterns, that one speech pattern, yes, it is an influence in their life. However, I do not think that that would be the cause of their stuttering. I think it would be more of a genetic link.
I know sometimes when we're pre-recording radio shows and I get a feedback of my own voice, I'll start to stutter because that's what I'm hearing my voice and it's just really knocking me off. Could stuttering be a hearing problem?
Nobody is sure of what causes stuttering. There's so much research out about stuttering, but there really is no concrete evidence as to how stuttering occurs. And again, there is a genetic link, but not all stutterers have someone in their family that also stutters. So nobody knows why a person stutters. There's a lot of different therapies as to how to prevent stuttering, but again, there's nothing even proven to work. You just have to try a variety of exercises in order to overcome it.
When should kids be saying what words? Like if your kid doesn't talk and they're a year old, is that a real red flag or where's the cutoff?
I don't know if I would be too concerned with a child that didn't talk at one, but if they weren't making any sounds, I would be very concerned. A child should at least be babbling and making noises to their dolls and when they're doing their pretend play. There should be noise. If there's no noise, then I would think that there's a hearing issue and definitely go to an audiologist. But they should be saying a cluster of about two words by the time they're two. Mommy, cookie. Those are things that they should be able to say by the time they hit two. But between 18 months and two, there should definitely be a few words in their vocabulary. By 2 years old, they should have about 50 words that they say consistently.
Should they also be doing language or body language, or is that too, like when they want a cookie, point to it, or some kind of indication like that? Should that go together?
They don't have to. It is nice when you have the visual as well as the words, because they sometimes always don't sound like what they want. But no, they don't need to be doing that. It does help. All my three children have signed when they were little and did a little bit of signing. And believe me, it's very primitive and very little signing. But it was a way of them to start communicating with us. So sign is a great way to start children out when they're little.
Here's a nice question. Is there any way to get children to use their indoor voice?
If she knows, she could let me know. No, I don't know. I think we have to just keep saying we need to use our indoor voice. But again, children are children, and they're used to yelling and screaming and talking the way they want to talk. Again, we just have to keep telling them you need to use your indoor voice. I guess at that point you could use maybe a behavior chart if it's getting to be a little very loud in your house, where every time they use their indoor voice, they could get a sticker to give them some positive reinforcement for doing what you want them to do.
So is this some activities that you have outlined in your book?
Not necessarily the indoor voice, because that isn't a speech problem. But yes, I do have some activities in there using, again, basic things that you already have in your house and games that you already have, and games are in the book. There's also charts in the back where you can track what you're doing, the goal that you want to work on, the activity that you did, and how it worked for you, so that you know when, if you go back and you're only going to do an activity maybe twice a week, you'll be able to keep a running record of how your activities are going and if you're seeing any progress.
In looking at, I just totally lost my question here. It was about speech, so I'll look at something else. This is a question from an audience member. When speech and language issues are present, what percent of the time are they accompanied by other medical issues? What a great question.
That is an excellent question. However, I do not know the actual percentage of individuals that would have something else besides just a speech and language issue. I will tell you this, that the most referred service in schools in the United States is just speech. And it does not have another disorder with it. It's just speech or language. So that's the number one referred service throughout the United States. That's good to know, because it does mean that there isn't another disorder with it. It's just one service that the child needs.
I would have thought reading would be a really big one.
Well, reading isn't a child study team issue. So I'm talking about just the related services that would go hand in hand with the child study team.
Okay, another question from the audience. Sorry we couldn't answer that last one. Do speech and language issues affect receptive as well as expressive language?
Well, some children only have receptive issues and some children only have expressive issues.
Can you define those two for our audience?
Absolutely. Receptive is the language that we hear and that we take in and how we respond to it. If I gave a child directions, please pick up the book, put it on the table, and sit down. That's receptive. That's a three-step direction. And if the child can follow it out, obviously they can understand the spoken word. Expressive language is the language that the child speaks, what they're telling you. So, of course, there probably is at times a link where both receptive and expressive language is delayed, but usually it's just one or the other.
Okay, and you address both of these in your book?
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of research in the book, or is this a very practical manual?
To be honest, there's not a lot of research in the book. It is for parents. It's simple. It's easy to read. It's easy to get through. It gets to the point, gives you the information that you need without a lot of fluff. And again, I give you a lot of information as to where to go if you needed to find that information, if you wanted the research or the support to back up what's in the book.
Do you ever do workshops for parents or public appearances or anything like that?
I have not. I do own an educational services company in New Jersey, and I contract with schools to provide services. And I have therapists that work for me. I do professional development in the schools for teachers and therapists in New Jersey.
But only for schools, never for parents. It sounds like it's something that's needed.
Well, if there was a need, I would definitely do it.
Okay. So can you give parents, okay, if they're not talking by this age, if they're saying this word in this way, okay, they need to keep a list of that, and then do they go to the school? Do they seek you out? Can you give us the website and name of your company? Or would you rather they all go through the school?
Well, the school is really their first stop, because that really will be able to, they'll be able to point the people in the right direction, parent in the right direction, as to where to go to get testing done, to make sure that there isn't something severely wrong, and to make sure that the child gets on track as soon as possible. So I really think that the school district should be your first stop, even if the child is only one or two. Call the school district, and they'll be able to give you information as to where to go for early intervention services and where to go for therapy services, because that's the time to start them right away.
So people can get your book just through the bookstores. I know I found it on Barnes & Noble and also on Amazon, so it's not a site that they could go to and buy your book.
Well, there is a site. It's buildingbetterspeech.com, but I will have to say, just like your site was down, this site goes down sometimes as well, so I would say if you wanted to order, it's better to just go to barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com.
Building Better Speech.
.com.
Okay, we have another audience question.
Okay, great.
Well, we have several here. How much of speech issues are hearing issues?
A hearing issue is a hearing issue. That's how I usually say it. If it's hearing related, then it really needs to be dealt with through an audiologist, number one. And then, of course, you will need speech and language services. an intervention by a speech-language pathologist. If there is a hearing issue, there is definite, it impacts speech 100%. So whenever there's a hearing issue, there is a speech issue.
Is there certain speech patterns that will come out that will be indicative of a hearing problem, like maybe slurring or not saying something clearly?
Usually when children can't hear, they usually don't speak. If it's just a moderate hearing loss, they do speak, but low-frequency sounds are sounds that they have trouble producing, which is the S, the Z. Those are sounds that usually they can't produce because they can't hear them themselves.
We had one little guy in here, and he was talking about going bowling because we do pre and post. And his issue was thimerosal, which is from a vaccination. But before he had the vaccination, he could talk clearly. Then with the toxin in his voice, he sort of ran everything together when he said, "We'll go bowling," kind of thing. And then, you know, after we helped him, his body fix his healing, or fix his hearing, which was actin, potassium, and myosin in his case, he was very crisp with his words. "We are going to go bowling." So in cases like that, when that happens, I just think that's a hearing issue, but that's just my...
I don't know because I haven't seen the child, and I don't know what his test would come out, if he did have a hearing test or if he had a speech and language eval. I don't know what any of that would uncover for me. But it almost sounds like he has a low tone in his face, and again, I didn't see him, and I would think that that's a muscular issue as far as not being able to form the words appropriately, and sometimes they slur, almost like a stroke patient would do.
Mm-hmm.
They have the muscular issue, and that's why the words are all slurred and running together. But again, you saw the child. I don't know what the child looked like or if they did have low tone in their face.
I didn't particularly notice that, but he said he couldn't hear right, that things sounded like they were underwater.
Underwater.
To him. After we helped fix his hearing, then he came back and said now he knew, because he knew the difference with it. I know in my own case, I had a stroke a couple of years ago, a very stupid stroke, and stupid because I went on a crazy fad, clean out your bowel diet of just nuts, and my vitamin K just peaked and I threw a clot. But it was odd for me that my palate felt frozen. And you think, or I thought my palate was not a movable thing, you know, the roof of my mouth. It just was there. But with the stroke, it kind of froze it up, and I couldn't sneeze. It was very, very hard to learn to laugh again. But just freezing up some of those muscles in my mouth was a real issue. So is that something that happens with kids, that they just don't develop the movement of some of those muscles?
Absolutely, yes. Children can have what's called low tone in their face. And sometimes you can't really see it, but you can hear it when they go to speak. You can hear that they're not able to move the tongue and the lips the way they're supposed to in order to produce sounds. And it almost sounds very lazy, where that they just can't get it out and labor their speech. But yes, it definitely happens to children.
Is there any issue that parents can watch, like how the baby gets the food from the front to the back of their mouth as they develop those muscles? Would that be any indicator for them to look for?
You could. That is definitely the time when those muscles are starting to develop. A bottle. Well, they say breastfeeding is the best because they do. They're able to develop those muscles even quicker because it's much harder to get the milk out of a breast than it is a bottle. So they have to use those muscles a little bit more, and they tone quicker. However, even using a pacifier, which some people say don't use, but the pacifier, that sucking motion, really does develop those muscles. And giving them different texture foods when they're ready to eat is really important. A lot of kids have a preference to the soft, smooth pudding, Jell-O, things that are easy instead of biting and chewing. And that's really important for them to do when they're starting to eat.
I should have just asked the audience question that came in, because it pertains to that. I was just doing it because I was trying to think in my own case when I lost the ability to speak, what was the issue. Is it common that children with speech delay development issues have issues moving their tongues?
Again, sometimes they do. There is what is commonly referred to as tongue-tied, and that's when the tongue cannot be lifted off the off of the bottom of the mouth, and the tongue actually has to be snipped from the bottom of the mouth. That's not very common, so that could be one of the reasons. Another reason is the muscle tone. Not necessarily, though, in the tongue. It's more in the lips and in the facial muscles than it is in the tongue.
Here is an absolutely excellent question, I think. What are the top three things you should look for when you find a speech and language therapist, when trying to find a speech and language therapist?
Excellent question. There are many things that you should look for. The number one thing that I would definitely say to look for is to go on the American Speech and Hearing Association's website, which is ASHA again, and make sure that they're certified through them. They have a list of all of the speech language pathologists that are certified through them and who have completed what's called their C's, which is their clinical year, 1 year of clinic. And that means that they've been working under another speech-language pathologist for an entire year and have passed all the prerequisites in order to obtain that additional certification. It's really good to have because then you know that they have some real-life experience and they've worked with another therapist. So that would be number one. Number two, I would definitely make sure that they have a focus of children. Some speech-language pathologists only have a focus on adults, or only do stroke victims, or rehab, or only work in hospitals, or only deal with swallowing. So you want to make sure that the therapist that you pick is focused on what your child's needs are. And number three, you need to feel comfortable with the person. I would make sure that you definitely feel comfortable with them as well as the child. If the child doesn't want to be with them, then that's not a good match for you. You have to find someone that's going to engage the child, get them interested in activities, because the only way that they're going to make any progress is if they have a connection with that therapist. So those are the three things that I would say.
Okay. This may be a bit controversial. Another audience question. When speech and language issues are present, is it true that most schools wait to address the issue until the child is older? And if this is true, why is that the case?
Okay. I don't know where this person is in particular, but Like I said before, schools may wait because that particular, if it's just an articulation issue, which is the actual production of individual sounds, if it's just an articulation issue, like I said before, some of those sounds do not develop until 8. So they may not address it at 5 or 6 or 7. So it may seem like they're really dragging their feet. However, if you look at the developmental charts, it may not be something that needs to be addressed at that time. Another thing is that schools sometimes do not address speech if it does not have an educational impact and they feel that it just is not something that needs to be addressed. And that's when the parents need to intervene. They need to either go to their own speech-language pathologist or they need to try to do something at home in order to help the child with their speech because it does cause problems. It causes long-term problems with self-esteem. Children that have speech and language disorders that do not get assistance usually perform below grade level, so it does need to be worked on. But again, it depends on what that state's requirements are for dealing with children with speech issues, and it may be, if it doesn't impact them educationally, they're not even going to touch it.
You talked about developmental charts. Is that something you referenced or is actually in your book?
It's in the book, yes. I do have developmental charts in the book. I also have charts on, there was a prior question on what they should be saying at what time, and there is a chart on that as well. It gives you an idea of what they should be saying, how many words they should be saying. I'll just give you an example. I have the book open right now. 12 to 24 months. And what's there is, can you sense 20 words, understands up to 50 words, speaks in 1 to 2 word utterances, follows uncomplicated directions, bringing to light, knows the word no, and they're interested in communicating. So, and I have this for every single step of the way, all the way up. I'm just going to look to make
great.
Sure.
I think sometimes kids don't know what no means because the parents aren't consistent. We have about 3 minutes left, and I want to touch on something. Kids that get made fun of because they can't talk plain or they stutter, how is that addressed in your book?
It is not. However, it's something that is really an issue. Again, if they're getting made fun of in school, that, and going back to the last question with why they wait, if a child is getting made fun of in school, that impacts their education. It impacts their self-esteem, and it will definitely impact if whether or not they're going to contribute in class because they don't want to be made fun of. So these are things that a parent can go to the school with and say, these issues are negatively affecting my child's educational experience here, and they need to be addressed through the school. And many times the school will address that. But parents really have to be proactive. When they see that there is a speech disorder, they really need to intervene on their own if they can. And a lot of things they can do just as babies, as they're growing, is to read a lot, talk to them a lot, maintain eye contact, turn off background noise, and make sure they're hearing your voice as much as possible.
Even in utero?
Yes, absolutely.
And to let our listeners know that things are general guidelines that are in books like this. If your kids are ahead or a little behind, that's probably still okay. But when they get a lot behind, then is that the place where they should seek out a therapist?
Absolutely. And all of those things are in the book. It does tell you when you should go seek somebody out and when things are okay. It's completely okay, again, if they still can't say their R's and they're 6 years old, it's okay. It's okay. And there's things that in the book that they can do at home to help that R.
And you've got those in the book, and you can buy Building Better Speech Manual, A Guide to Speech and Language Development and Intervention by Jessica Nappi-Stiletti. You can buy this. I found it at Amazon for $24.95. I did not look at what Barnes & Noble is selling it for.
It's the same price, however, there are some that are less.
Okay, and there's free shipping at Amazon, I see, and they'll gift wrap it for you.
Yes.
There was some reviews on there. I want to read them. I loved the book. Loved this book. Wonderful. Great resource. You know, short and to the point. I think it's great. What it says about your book, From Birth to Adulthood, the Building Better Speech Manual provides proven activities, developmental milestones in speech and language, word lists, assist in identifying whether intervention is necessary. That's an important one right there. And much more. Anyone who wants to know more about speech and language development and disorder identification needs the Building Better Speech Manual. And can people get in touch with you, or you just want them to go to your site, buildingbetterspeech.com?
Yes, and there is a link to get in touch with me there.
Okay. Thank you, Jessica, for being with us. We certainly appreciate it. We only have just a few seconds left. I want to remind people that we are offering free classes here and a free computer program so that you can take vocal profiles. So if any of you would like that program, just get in touch with us at nano voice.org. You can download that computer program. We don't ask anything for it. We don't even ask you your name. But you can stay in touch with us for free classes, free computer programs, free manuals for what we're doing. And we certainly appreciate you listening, and please stay in touch and join us next week.